Kasky hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raider fake the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Raider to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, the bowling team playing for a national title this past weekend. We'll recap that. Also, the baseball team getting ready for a nice stretch at home. 7 of the next 8 games at Tomlinson Stadium. Women's golf is at the conference championships. And the spring football game is coming up this weekend. Excited about that. And speaking of football, we're going to start with an A-State great today. The program's all-time leading scorer, now the place kicker for the New Orleans Saints. Our friend and somebody who's returning to campus for Pac Day this weekend, it's Blake Grippy. How you doing, Blake?
Oh, doing good, Matt. Thank you for having me.
Well, how much are you looking forward to being back on campus?
Yeah, I'm excited. It's been a little bit, and you know, obviously still keep up with everything. Excited to see some of those guys, and there's not many that I know that are still left there, but excited to go see who we got, and good to be back in Jonesboro.
So kind of, I guess, lift the curtain back to a couple of conversations I was in, and one of them involved you, but I want to start back kind of even before the conversation you and I had. I had a conversation with Jacob Still, who, you know, we all know is, you know, the most loyal A-State guy there was. It just so happens that it kind of by chance, Blake Grippy's name came up in that conversation. And Jacob Still and I were sort of in agreement that, you know, we didn't view Blake Grippy transferring out of Arkansas State the way we viewed a lot of the other folks who transferred out along the way. And then it just so happened, Grippy, you and I talked the next day, and I relayed that to you. And, you know, I thought you had some interesting things to say. But so to go back to that decision, you said it was by design. It was very important for you when you made that move to make it the right way.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, the landscape of college football now, unfortunately, there's not a, I wouldn't say a whole lot of loyalty. And it's definitely different than it was when I came into it. But, you know, Arkansas State was my, you know, one walk-on offer coming out of high school. So forever in debt to Jonesboro and everything that, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at without the long 5 years that it took to get a 18-year-old, 135-pound kid to, you know, where the heck I'm at today. So I love Jonesboro. It does feel like home more than any, you know, any school or anywhere else that I've been. So, you know, I love chatting with those guys. And like you said, Jacob Still is Mr. A-State. I'm not sure there's a past player, maybe other than Tommy Walker, that loves Arkansas State more than him. So excited. I've been talking with him and excited to get back and see a bunch of those guys that I haven't seen in a couple of years. So I'm so excited to get there this weekend.
Whether it be players, whether it be fans, everybody still, and I know we're a couple of years into this now, is kind of adjusting to the whole transfer portal and how you're supposed to think when it comes to the portal. And I agree with you guys. It's a little bit different with you. You graduated here. You spent 5 seasons here.
And graduated twice.
Yeah, twice.
Graduated twice here. I'm sorry, Blake. So it's cool that you do take such pride in being a Red Wolf. And I know that it helps that your teammates with another Red Wolf still with the Saints and DeMario Davis and a guy that cares so much about this program just like you do. But I remember last year talking with you. In fact, we were at Sunbelt Conference Media Days and you came over to the hotel and we were able to have a nice visit. But one of the first things that you said was, hey, I'm going to these meetings and I'm sitting next to DeMario in these meetings every day. And he'd come up to you and say, what's up, Red Wolf? So yeah. Tell me about that. And obviously, it's cool to have a former Red Wolf on the same team with you now, but just that whole experience hanging out with DeMario.
Yeah, DeMario is a one-of-one leader of many. Everything that guy does is at the highest level. And, you know, when you have a guy like that on your team or, you know, around, you definitely, you know, take a step back and watch how they operate and see why he's on year 10, 11, 12. I'm not exactly sure. I know it's a heck of a lot more than many more years than I do. But, I mean, even when I first got there, he might have not known my name, but he did know that I was from A-State. And funny enough, I ended up sitting next to him in the team meeting, and that's just kind of where, you know, I've fallen into. But he's an awesome guy. On the field, he's I mean, that defense is, at the end of the day, his. You know, he runs that, and he's an impressive man. But it is cool to have that Jonesboro, Arkansas State connection and to be able to throw up the Wolves up to, you know, somebody that, you know, had that bond with. So it's been an awesome experience.
So when you are an undrafted guy, a kicker at that, the youngest looking guy in the room, kind of how's that help your street cred when, kind of as you said, the leader of the whole team takes you in and says, you know, sit by me?
I will say, you know, you're not given anything, especially, you know, like you said, being undrafted, being a kicker sure as heck don't help that either. So, you know, everything that you kind of got to get, you got to earn. But it definitely does help, you know, having a guy like that to, you know, maybe vouch for you a time or two. So, you know, when you have that kind of guidance and a guy to watch, like I said earlier, it makes it a lot easier. And I was a lot more comfortable coming into the situation knowing I had past people or you know, prior connections to others on this team. I didn't feel like I was by myself.
Well, before we kind of move off to Mario and more kind of just on what you got going, you described him, I thought it's pretty good, a one-of-one leader. So now that you've kind of been, you know, on the receiving end of that, what makes it work? Like, how's he tick? Like, what makes him the leader of men that he is?
First of all, you can't be a leader of anybody unless you're taking care of yourself and you're taking care of your family. And when you look at just a family man and you know, what the sacrifices he makes for his family, he has everything on his end, at least from what I see from the outside, completely, you know, shored up and steady. So that way, when it comes to others and being able to help others and branch out, and you know, whether it's a young player like me or a young linebacker or fellow vet that comes in that, to be real honest, needs some more guidance and somebody to watch. You know, he is that guy. If I was to say there was one person who is the vocal leader for the New Orleans Saints, I mean, it is DeMario Davis. You know, every single pregame, he's the guy in the middle of the circle. You know, he's not afraid also to share his faith on, I think it's Tuesday morning prayer groups. You know, everything that guy is, it really is, you know, high class. So he really is a one of one and a special guy to be around.
I do want to go back and kind of relive your journey at Arkansas State a little bit, because I think it's a great story to tell. And I'm going to bring up a couple of things here that I think kind of helped define your career at A-State, at least in my mind. And I'll see if you agree with it or not. But you come in and you redshirt in 2017. You end up winning the job as a redshirt freshman in 2018, which obviously is a big deal, being able to compete as a redshirt freshman. I don't think you and I have ever had this conversation. I know we haven't done it in any kind of format like this before. But because you're at where you're at now, I do want to know how this kind of affected your overall story. The 2018 Arizona Bowl, I know, is probably not your fondest memory as a Red Wolf. But I want to know how it affected you and your determination going forward, ending that season the way it did in Arizona, and then the team bringing in some competition the next offseason, having to win the job the following year again, and then going on to be the guy and maybe having your best year as a collegiate kicker that next year. You were 19 of 22 in 2019. Really solidified your place as far as the place kicker at Arkansas State. But I want to know just how that day in Arizona affected you and the rest of your career going forward.
Yeah, 100%. I've always said, you know, when I've had this talk with other people and they ask, you know, what, I guess, your turning point or when did you kind of start that path to where I was at today? And it is kind of funny and wild to say that 2018 Arizona Bowl was it. So like you said, when I came in at 17, it was a freshman that redshirted. I had no business playing, to be real honest. I was so far away from being at a level and mentally and physically to be ready to, you know, take on a role like that and play Division I football. I was just not there, coming from, you know, kind of my high school background of being a soccer player. I had some learning and some catching up to do. And then going into that 2018 season, I got the job week, I guess, two and a half, if you want to call it, because second half of the Alabama game in 18 was actually technically when I became the starter. We ended up not even having the kick in the second half at Bama, which is kind of funny because that could have been my first, and you know, who knows what could have happened then. But I didn't make my first start or make my first, you know, rep and appearance until that week three at Tulsa. I had a year there where I had a lot of up and downs. I learned a lot about myself and, you know, what it takes to operate and have success. And thankfully I had guys like Cody Grace to kind of, you know, help mold me and give me a little bit of guidance, because he was, you know, 3 or 4 years older than me at that time. So to, you know, navigate that year the best I could was not easy. To get into that bowl game, I feel like it's real easy as a young kid, as a kid with not very much experience, to kind of get caught up, especially at a bowl game. And, you know, in college football nowadays in general, it's easy to get caught up in everything else other than playing and taking care of your job. Yeah, you think of a bowl game week, you're sitting there, you know, doing all these events and getting gifts and doing a, you know, maybe a half serious practice, or, you know, there's a lot of distractions during that bowl prep week. And, you know, you get to the game, and I vividly remember, I think it was either first drive or second drive. And I'll say, to start out with, my regular season of 2018 was nothing special in general. I believe I was like mid 70s, if not low 70s. And I remember being sent out for, I believe it was a 47 yarder. And I remember taking my steps back and like kind of looking up and addressing the situation. I remember that upright looked about a mile away. And obviously ended up missing that, if that's where your mind's at going into that rep. Missed that. And then in the second, with kind of like the team just drove down the field trying to get some points before halftime. And being a young guy, not being able to move on from a miss that bad, to then miss that one at the end of the second half, all that momentum your team built and in hopes to get points and to move on to the second half with some momentum, and kind of throw that away as well. So after you have a first half like that, you kind of go in and you're, you know, I'm not going to call it crisis management or trying to take care of the situation. But when you go in halftime, you got to, you know, really dig deep and figure out how the heck we're going to play a second half, or you might not ever get a chance again. And go that entire second half and not get a single rep. We went with like a backdoor lineman, like our left tackle, Leonard Bonner, ran like a screen on like fourth down, like the 5-yard line. And they absolutely stuffed it. And it was like 4th and 3 on the 5-yard line. So it's easy for me to say to kick that, but, you know, hell, they just watched what I did in that first half. So why would they throw me out there, you know? So I don't have a single rep that entire second half till, I want to say it was 3 seconds left.
Yeah.
I know it was on the right hash, maybe high 30s, low 40s. I remember absolutely shaking. Like, it wasn't even funny. You know, I had people back home I knew that were watching the game. I had my family that flew out to Arizona.
I think they were trying to ice you, too.
Well, they actually, it was a false start. So I took the steps back, and I was, you know, shaking. So then I got to take my steps again. And I remember getting back there and just kind of taking a deep breath and being like, this is really it right here. And I remember the weight of the world feeling it, you know, on my shoulders. And thankfully to make that and push overtime and then, you know, make another one in overtime that honestly might have been my best ball the entire year. It was a short field goal. It wasn't even anything crazy. But I just remember being the most confident kid, you know, most confidence I'd ever felt in my life. And it was that kick in the, you know, that the first, I guess, drive of overtime. And then to have all that go down after the first half and you know, really honestly being too young to even process, you know, what exactly had happened. You know, unfortunately we lost that game. We kicked a field goal, they scored a touchdown, and you know, you could say that I might have cost the team a bowl victory. And so when you're going then from the end of 18 season into that 2019 and all the recruiting, and you know, they bring in a scholarship kicker, and I'm still walking through this whole moment, mind you. You know, they bring a scholarship kid. I know I got a lot of work that needs to be done and a lot of preparation. And thankfully, we had a lot of strength coaches that were pretty big into sports psych and worked a lot on my body. And, you know, I think I made a lot of big strides and gains and advances in my game and physicality and everything that, you know, about my body. I really got a lot better that offseason and didn't necessarily even realize it. All I worried about was just being better and, you know, attacking every day. And, you know, I knew that's the only thing I could do or else I wouldn't have a shot. So, you know, to do that, and I remember Coach Anderson actually came up to me the first day of fall camp, in that 2019 season. And, you know, we got a scholarship freshman standing there behind me and me still walk on. You know, he tells me, are you going to let this kid take your spot? That was a real wake up call as day one of fall camp. Let's just say I had a choice word for him. But the second word was no. I don't think, honestly, he probably expected me to answer that way, being a young specialist. But I made sure he knew that that was not going to be my intention. And I made sure he knew that that wasn't going to be the case. So to end up going and actually having a really good camp and then to have the best year of my career and get all the accolades and everything that comes with that, you know, that whole story right there is kind of my turning point to kind of, you know, kickstart where I've been at today. And you're made up of your mistakes. I'm not afraid to tell you that I've made a lot of them as a specialist. And unfortunately, I've had to, you know, almost mess it up once before I realized how to do it the second time. But, you know, I've just stuck to myself and try to stay as confident as can and just take it, you know, one year at a time. And, you know, next thing you know, you're in year two of the NFL. And I think if you would have told somebody right there at that Arizona Bowl that kid's been playing the NFL, they might laugh at you. it's a long road. And I'm not sure, honestly, I've ever talked in detail as much of that whole deal, you know, as I did right there. But, you know, I truly believe that, you know, if without that, I'm not sure I'd be where I was at today. And there've been a lot of challenges along the road, but, you know, as long as you, you know, stay true to yourself and keep working, you know, who knows where you're going to pop out one day. So there's a lot of kids that maybe that need to hear that or, you know, need to know that as well. So, you know, if that story can hopefully touch one kid, then, you know, I feel like I'm a good example of trial and error. So, you know, don't ever quit and just keep going out there and see what you can do, because you never know where you'll be one day.
For the record, now that, because you kind of breezed past this part, but did you say you were told at halftime at Alabama you'd be the kicker, but then just never got a chance to kick?
Yeah, that was the start. So I remember that entire second half of the Alabama game, I was just sitting there on the sideline like, holy cow, I'm going to make my first appearance in Bryant Denny Stadium against Nick Saban. And that's when they had Jalen Hurts and Tua. I was just like, holy cow, this is real now. And, you know, maybe I felt the weight of that much because I might have known that I definitely could have prepared better for that moment. And I felt like I was just kind of thrown out there. And you know, if you're not prepared, you're not going to have success. So, yeah, but that was a wild deal. I think we ended up, you know, missing maybe a kick or two in the first half and just got really thrown into there that year. And tried to make the most of it. So I'm honestly glad. I would have loved to play and get a rep in at Alabama, but it was a lot nicer to make my first appearance at Tulsa, which I think is the smallest stadium in Division I versus, you know, Alabama. That might be one of the biggest.
Well, Blake, I appreciate you sharing everything you did about your journey there and just how that affected you. But, you know, one of the other things I always associate with you, whether it be at Arkansas State, Notre Dame, now in New Orleans, is just the supreme confidence that you seem to have every time you go out there. And I'm sure that's an attribute that you have to have as a place kicker. You have to be confident, and you have to have a really short memory.
My dad's always told me, you know, there's a fine line of cocky and confident, you know, riding that line and making sure you take care of yourself and you're ready to go when it's your time. I mean, that's all you can really ask for is the opportunity. And then what you do and how you handle all those opportunities is what makes you up. So, you know, that short memory is a part of it. I would say that, you know, no matter what all we all say about a short memory, we definitely don't at some times, but you don't have a choice. So you force yourself to have it and regardless of what's going through your mind and make yourself go out and execute. So if you don't, then you won't stick around. That's just the nature of it.
You mentioned, you know, Cody Grace, the punter that obviously A-State fans remember, and being older than you and kind of how he helped you through that. And listen, I know it's the lowest hanging fruit, but I do remember that year. I don't remember a lot of trash talking lines, but I do remember the one at Georgia Southern when the specialist went out first to warm up in the student section. Yep. Somebody yelled at Cody Grace, "Hey, I didn't know it was bring your kid to work day."
Yeah, bring your kid to work day. Yeah, that one's a classic. Obviously, there's a lot of people, especially fans, when you're at an away game, that would like to throw out what they think. But you know, I never really pay too much attention to them. But when you hear something like that and it's something you ain't heard before, that, like, when they're creative, that's when you that's when you give them a little bit of a laugh. But that was pretty good. Me and Cody just kind of looked at each other and thought, that's pretty good. So we kind of looked at the guy and gave him a chuckle. But yeah, we were just playing catch on the sideline, like father son, of course. And I think Cody was probably 6'2", probably 230 at the time. And
looked like,
and
he was a linebacker.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sitting there 5'8", you know, maybe a couple over 150 pounds. So a pretty accurate description there.
It's cool that you still do have the connections you do back here at Arkansas State. And you stayed during the coaching change and played for one season under Butch Jones. And he's been really supportive of you.
He has. You know, obviously going through that transfer process, he actually, I'm not going to say he helped me leave, but I mean, he was completely understanding of, you know, what was going on and why, you know, I was, you know, maybe looking forward. I mean, I'm actually bringing him a jersey this weekend when I head to town. And I got introduced to another level of college football when he came to town. You know, Coach A, and I learned a lot with Coach A and that staff. But, you know, Butch coming from Tennessee and coming from Bama, you know, he'd been around a little bit of a different pedigree and understand how stuff works, especially dealing with, you know, negativity and everything that, you know, those UT fans might have on him. But, you know, I had a lot of talks with him about, you know, being prepared for the moment, regardless of where you're at and what level. And you know, I'm definitely a better player because of him and that staff and a lot of those special team coaches that he brought in. So I'm excited to be back and say what's up to him again. So it'll be a good time.
You know, you mentioned it's funny out to that year, your last year here, because you've talked about, you know, turning point being a bowl game. We know kind of you played in all those bowl games and, you know, used to playing in big games. But then comes that year, and you guys go through, I think it's an 8-game losing streak at some point there toward the end. You're at Monroe. And I can remember being on the sideline and that game unfolding tonight. It kind of goes back to your confidence at that point, too, because this thing starts to unfold. And with a few minutes left, I'm standing there by you and look at you, go, hey, you feel like kicking a game winner? He said, damn right I do. And that's what happened. So, like, you go through the high of playing in and winning bowl games, but then talk about that was such an unusual thing because that one felt like winning a bowl game when really what it was snapping the longest losing streak you'd ever had to deal with.
Yeah, and especially obviously kicking a game winner, you know, you might be pretty, you know, nervous or stressed out or the environment, you know, just the significance of the situation. But unfortunately, when it's going down, in Monroe, Louisiana, I think their stadium's called the Malone Stadium, if I'm right.
Yep.
And the funeral home at Malone, you know, they might have tried to get a little louder at that point in the game, but I remember honestly kind of being pretty humored by what they were trying to get at me, you know, when it was that time. But I mean, just like at that point in the year, that was kind of an unprecedented thing in my football career. Was, you know, at that point we're out in the season. You know, looking back at it with a lot of those guys that, you know, those little lineman guys that I was with and a lot of guys that, you know, might have been finishing their last year. I believe that would have been the last game that we won. And unfortunately, I guess I knew a little bit, you know, kind of had that thought in my head. And it's kind of wild how, you know, obviously it's a team game and everybody that, you know, contributes, but how much, you know, my certain one particular rep can alter those, you know, circumstances. So, you know, I remember being ready, being confident, and honestly not being nervous at all due to the where the game was at. But it was a good post-game celebration. It was nice to be able to go through that with those guys and you know, soak up a win that unfortunately we didn't get many that year. And so, you know, I honestly never forget that one. That was my first game winner. So hopefully we can get some more of those, but definitely more prepared, you know, now than I might have been then. But, you know, that was a good time with a good crew of players. And it was nice to be able to go through that and soak it up.
Well, Blake, we couldn't be prouder of you, man, and just thrilled to see everything that you're doing with the Saints. And can't wait to see you this weekend, man. Just really, really cool that you're coming back.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be at J-Town's on Friday night. I got an itch for those wings, and I haven't been there in a little bit. So if you want, you'll know where to find me.
You Huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is Demario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Back on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Well, for the second straight season and for the fourth time in school history, the A-State bowling team has finished as the national runner-up. Man, they did a great job getting there. Had to beat Youngstown State twice at the Final Four to set up the national championship. It was 1-2. Yeah. It went exactly according to plan. It was the Red Wolves and Jacksonville State. I don't know if it's more heartbreaking to see them fall in the fashion they did, or if it would have been easier if Jacksonville State just would have swept through the match.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But to lose in seven again was heartbreaking.
It was. It was not a pretty scene at my house.
At your house?
It was not. I'm glad...
Were we throwing furniture? What were we doing?
The remote.
The remote, okay.
Yeah, but...
You got to credit Jacksonville State.
Yeah, though. Well, so here's the deal, man. Basically, every program in the country would sign up to be where we are, except us. Right now, who out there, if you just went coach to coach, every program in the country wouldn't sign up to be in the finals three times in 4 years, even if you hadn't won one.
Sure.
It's no stretch to say now that we're the most consistent program in America to be in three finals in 4 years, and 16 straight tournaments and all the things. Unfortunately, in each of the last 2 years, we've been put in a situation where we did not have lane choice going to game seven. Last year, even though we were the undefeated team, Vanderbilt got lane choice in game seven because they were the higher seed,
yeah.
which sucks. I mean, that's a stupid loophole that I think they may have closed, except for in this particular instance this year, Jacksonville State was covered either way because they were the undefeated team and they were the higher seed. So you knew that no matter what, if a game seven rolled around,
and that makes sense,
they were getting to pick which lane it was on. You would have thought for sure watching the first half of that match that we were going to get put on that right lane. But then in the midst of that fifth game, we helped turn the right lane into the good lane and the left lane deteriorated. And so we ended up over there game six and seven and just couldn't get that one win that has eluded us for a national title.
Just felt for those leaders, Emma Stoll and Brooklyn Buchanan and Faith Welch, you know, they've been through this three times now.
Yep.
And Emma was here a couple of weeks ago, and you could just feel from her how much it meant to her. And look, three-time national runner-up, that's quite a feather in your cap.
Absolutely.
What an accomplishment. This program is in such a great spot, but just felt for those girls. Again, you go back to Jacksonville State, and it seemed like every time if you left a frame yeah. open, they're going to make you pay.
Yeah.
And they did.
Well, and if you weren't paying attention, and I think a lot of people were, the part of that you don't need to get hung up on is you lost to a team in its first year as a program. Because that's technically true, except for that's essentially the coaching staff and a lot of the team that won the 22 national championship at McKendree. They just all happened to load up and come to Jacksonville when they started that program. They hired the coaching staff from McKendree, and I think they showed they had six transfers from McKendree to Jacksonville State. So those are players and coaches that had been there and done that, even if they were at a school that had not.
Heartbreaking to lose another national championship, but congratulations to Coach Kostic and the bowling team for yet another phenomenal season, mm-hmm. which they definitely have.
And by the way, we talked about those seniors, and rightfully so. But I think, the other two in the lineup Saturday night were sophomores. Carly Van Dynen was unbelievable in the championship match.
Yeah.
And
she uses that two-handed style.
That's Maggie Toma.
Yeah.
And she was great in the championship match, too. So the two sophomores are good. They got a big-time contribution Saturday morning from a freshman to get back to the championship match. So those seniors are great, and they did so many things. But, it ain't over.
It's not. They'll be back next year. Who knows? It's going to happen at some point.
Yep.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours, welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Baseball team dropped 2 out of 3 over the weekend at South Alabama. Lost 10-3 on Friday. It was a close game through 6. Jella Vanderlei had a good start. He went 5 2/3 and gave up just 2 earned runs. Gave the Red Wolves a chance, but the Jags with a 7-run seventh inning to pull away in that one. Love the way our guys bounced back on Saturday, won that game 5-3. Not the way we really drew it up. Walking 10 batters and hitting 5 more, but our guys made big pitches when they needed to. And South Alabama ended up stranding 17 runners on base. And as much as anything, I was thrilled for Cross Jumper the other day in that 5-3 win. He comes to the plate with 2 outs, and the game is tied at 2 in the top of the 6th. And this is a kid that had, and Tommy Raffo will tell you this, and we talked about it in the postgame as well, he worked so hard in the offseason, had a phenomenal preseason, but for whatever reason, it just hasn't translated to the field this spring so far. For him to have the go-ahead 2-run home run, hit it to dead center field, I was really, really happy for Cross.
Yeah, because he puts in the work and just has so talented.
Uber
athletic,
talented. Yeah.
Beyond belief. So, and you could see it stretches, maybe about this point last year, you saw it sort of click with him, and he had a big second half of conference play. So certainly hope that's the start of another big second half for him.
And then on Sunday, a chance for a series win, and got a great start from Dylan Hine. This kid's been incredible.
Yeah, I like Dylan Hine.
Grad transfer from Ryder, and just really experienced and kind of guy you love on the mound on Sunday. He works quick. He pitches to contact, doesn't allow a lot of free bases. And he goes and gives you a quality start. He went 6 innings, gave up just 1 run. It's 1-1 after 6, but South scores 2 runs in the 7th. They go on to win 3-1. So you drop 2 out of 3. Still, you look at the standings right now. We're halfway through conference play. You need to be in the top 10 out of the 14 teams in the Sun Belt to make the conference tournament. There's a lot of teams that are in the mix. Everybody's in the mix to be in the top 10. So the good news for the Red Wolves, 3 of the final 5 series in conference are at home, and the next 2 series are at home. You're probably going to have to go this week without Will French against Appalachian State, but he was with the team this past weekend. He was going through fielding drills during batting practice. He was out there at second base. He was doing some bunting as well. And I think they're hoping that he's back in time for the Texas State series next week. And, man, that would be a huge boost going into the final 4 weeks of the season.
You said it. I know we talked a little bit about it probably last week, but, man, it's just it's amazing the impact. You think, you know, Tommy Raffo had nearly 2.5 years where when he's putting together a batting order, he really only had to figure out 8 spots because it always started with writing down Will French. And then all of a sudden that wasn't there, and you had up and down the lineup guys having to be in a different spot pretty much. So I know it'd just be such a sort of a calming presence, a stabilizing force to get him back, not just in the field, but I think especially in the lineup.
Red Wolves with 7 of the next 8 at home. Ole Miss in town Tuesday at 6, weather permitting. Going for a season sweep of the Rebels. Of course, the Red Wolves went in there to Oxford on February 21st and had that 4-2 win. Then this weekend, big series. Appalachian State's in town Friday at 6, Saturday at 4, and Sunday at noon.
You know, we'll talk about it here in just a bit. But, yeah, please note that Saturday at 4, a little different start time. And, obviously, we know why with where it falls into pack day. So we're going to run through that whole schedule in a bit to make sure you can get over to the time at 4 o'clock Saturday.
Track and field, they were busy with 2 different events in California and one in Little Rock this past weekend. And now they get ready to host their Alumni Classic that's coming up Friday and Saturday at the A-State Track and Field Complex. Admission to the 2-day event is absolutely free. Get to come out and watch the conference champs in action, getting ready for another conference championship run.
Yeah, and you know that's Friday and Saturday. Friday afternoon it gets started. Saturday morning the women's 5K starts at 9:30. They're going to have at some point their version of a senior day. They're going to recognize their seniors, I think, at 11:30 Saturday morning out at the track complex.
Women's golf, as we record this, are currently competing at the Sunbelt Conference Championships. That's at the Lakewood Golf Club in Point Clear, Alabama. And the Men's Championship is coming up next week in Madison, Mississippi. Tennis team ended up falling at Georgia State and Troy over the weekend. They're back at home this weekend as they host Southern Miss on Senior Day. That'll be Saturday at 10 a.m.
Yep. They'll do their senior day stuff. I think the schedule right now is they'll actually recognize their seniors. And again, these are kids that, you know, by and large, they've been through a lot, some of them. 5 coaches, as we've talked about here before. They're going to recognize those seniors, I believe, between doubles and singles. So probably in the, you know, the 11 o'clock neighborhood or so, they'll have tennis senior day.
Final regular season match, and that's also final tune-up for the Sun Belt Conference tournament for the tennis team, which is next week in Rome, Georgia.
Yeah, it looks like the biggest tennis center in the country.
Is it really?
It's in Rome, Georgia. I think so.
All right, let's get to pack day.
Yeah.
So we mentioned tennis at 10, got track and field going on.
Yep.
Baseball at 4, but it's the football spring game. Mm-hmm. The game starts at 1:15, but we mentioned Blake Groupie's here. I know J.D. McKissick,
yeah,
is going to be here. But we got a youth camp and all kinds of other stuff going on.
Yeah, so we talked about the other sports, so kind of lock in on the stuff happening at football. And really, you know, 10 o'clock is sort of the time you'll see activity cranking up. We'll have the Hijinks Kid Zone set up in Tailgate City. Also at 10 o'clock, we have 6-7 different food trucks set up in the parking lot right off Tailgate City. Also at 10 o'clock, Textbook Brokers is going to be set up with its big sidewalk sale where everything outside there is going to be at least 40% off. And so people have asked, and I want to stop right there for a second because we get the question a lot, getting it on social media quite a bit, is there an excess gear sale? And the answer is not this year. Quite honestly, for a couple different reasons, that's hard to do every year. Number one, yep, you have to compile the excess gear. So I think what I'd like to see happen, and I think what the plan would be, is to sort of get on a bit of a rotation between, you know, every other year having an excess gear sale, and then every other year off of that having this sale with Textbook Brokers where it's their biggest sale of the year that they typically have out in their parking lot, and they're going to have it, at, you know, out at the stadium Saturday. So that'll start at about 10 o'clock. Then you get to the youth clinic, and if you're listening to this and you don't know, the football team is doing a free camp for kids – first graders to eighth graders. And it's Saturday morning at the stadium, just a couple hours before the spring game. They're going to be on the field leading a youth football camp. Now, gates are going to open at 10:30 for check-in. And you don't have to pre-register, but it is, I'd say, encouraged. We'd ask you to, just to have a good sort of sense on how many kids we think are coming.
Yeah.
So the easiest way I can tell you to pre-register for the camp, because there is a longer address, but the easiest way is to probably go to astateredwolves.com/packday. astateredwolves.com/packday. And at the bottom, you're going to see the full schedule of events for the day. But there's going to be, when it's talking about the clinic, it says to register, click here. And it'll take you right to their page to sign up for that free camp. I think that'll be a lot of fun. It'll start at 11, check in at 10:30. Camp will go from 11 to about noon. And then at 11:30, back in Tailgate City, we're going to have a tent set up at Tailgate City where at 11:30, Blake Groupie, J.D. McKissick, are going to be out there signing some autographs and meeting folks.
It's a heck of a day.
Yeah. And I know you heard a little bit from football. I know some of the content they've got. You know, I think they're going to do some fun things challenge-wise amongst some position groups, but also they're producing a lot of video content for the board on Saturday where, and I don't mind telling you, like some of it is where like within a position group, you've got a veteran that is going to introduce you to a newcomer.
Oh.
In that position group on the video board. So they'll do some of that. Should be a fun day. You know, we had a big crowd last year at Pack Day for the spring game.
Did.
And hopefully the weather will cooperate. We'll have another one. And then we will have Pack Day posters like we did last year. And then when the game ends, we'll take 20 minutes or so and open up the field. The players will just spread out across the field in position groups. You can go out and get autographs and pictures. And then hopefully everybody head over to baseball for at 4 o'clock first pitch.
Going to be a fun weekend on campus. Again, just thrilled that J.D. McKissick and Blake Groupie are coming in. And, man, what a great conversation with Blake. Really, really appreciate him joining us and opening up the way he did.
Yeah,
and
he sure did.
Look, we even talked to him as soon as we finished recording. We'll go ahead and tell you. And I told him, I said, look, I meant to give you a heads up on the Arizona Bowl stuff. But he said, you know, I've never talked about it in depth, and that made a big impact on my career. And I kind of had a feeling it might, but to hear that from him, I think says a lot because, look, everybody faces adversity at some point in whatever they do. But for him to handle it the way he did, I think is a big part of his story.
I mean, it was make or break from his career, not the Arizona Bowl, but what you do from there. Was going to be your make or break for his career. And obviously, as we talk to him now, getting ready for year two in the NFL, we see which way he went from that kind of crossroads he found out in a very cold day in Arizona.
It was cold, wasn't it? I remember looking at the temperature that day in Arizona, and it was colder in Tucson, much colder than it was in Jonesboro.
Go to the Arizona Bowl, they said. The best part is the weather. And it was
freezing
rained,
all week.
And then it rained and then got cold. Yeah, consistently warmer in Northeast Arkansas than it was in Tucson while we were at the Arizona Bowl.
Well, so much for going to the middle of the desert in December. Hey, we appreciate you listening. As always, for Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you Saturday for Pack Day.